Well, we're back in Luke today, Luke chapter 12, and we're just a few verses, actually, in Luke 12, just a few verses past the midpoint of the Gospel of Luke, just to give you some kind of barometer of where we're at in this book. But and there are some exciting things that lie ahead as we continue on, especially in these next few chapters that are amazing prior to getting to the cross. Discipleship, the second coming, and some parables are going to be expressed by Jesus as well. Let me just read the seven verses that I'm going to look at this morning as we continue in this section. Verse 1 says, "Under these circumstances, after so many thousands of people had gathered together that they were stepping on one another, he began saying to his disciples, first of all, 'Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. But there is nothing covered up that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. Accordingly, whatever you have said in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in the inner rooms will be proclaimed upon the housetops. I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do. But I will warn you to whom to fear. Fear the one who, after he has killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. And are not five sparrows sold for 2 cents? Yet not one of them is forgotten before God. Indeed, the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear. You are more valuable than many sparrows.'" As we come into chapter 12, back in chapter 11, you may recall there was a very heated argument going on, or debate going on, regarding Jesus. Does his power come from Satan, or does his power come from God? That was one of the debates. Another debate was with Jesus and the Pharisees at lunch, at the very end of the chapter, where he was basically calling them hypocrites, calling them whitewashed tombs, though the term is not used there, it's used in other places. You look so good on the outside, but inside you're dead. That's hypocrisy. You give an appearance of one thing, but you're something else. And he basically pronounces woes on them at the end of that chapter. So much so that you see in verse 53 of chapter 11, when he left there, the scribes and the Pharisees began to be very hostile and to question him closely on many subjects. And basically what they're doing is plot how they're going to get rid of him. The opposition is going to increase as we move to the cross. And secondly, how to discredit him, listening closely, looking for some misstep, something of which they can discredit him in the eyes of the people. So it's all of that is in mind as you come to chapter 12. The crowd is huge. As we see in verse 1, people are stepping on one another, as you see in verse 1. And this begins a long discourse to this crowd of people that is going to go from verse 1 of chapter 12 all the way to chapter 13, verse 9. And what's interesting in that is, though there are going to be many blessings said and many positive things said on Jesus' part, the backdrop of this section really is about judgment. Judgment. Let me show you some sample verses. One we just looked at and read a few moments ago, verse 5. "I warn you whom to fear. Fear the one who, after he is killed, has authority to cast you into hell." Look at verses 19 and 20 of Luke 12. "I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now you own what you have prepared." See that in verse 20? Verse 35, "Be dressed in readiness and keep your lamps lit." This is regarding the second coming of Christ. Be ready. Be ready. Have your lamp lit. Verse 40 of chapter 12, "You too be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour that you do not expect." That's sort of the same section of 35 and 40, or sort of the same section. Verse 46, "The master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, in an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers." See that? We got a backdrop of judgment in this discourse that Christ is making to this large crowd of people. Verse 5 of chapter 13, "I tell you, no, but unless you repent, you will all likewise perish." And verse 9, "If it bears fruit next year, fine, but if not, cut it down." These are just a passage with this backdrop of judgment. He's going to say some other things of blessing in here for sure. But this is the backdrop. This is sort of behind the scenes of what's sort of behind all of the things that he is saying. Jesus is speaking back to chapter 12, verse 1. He's speaking, as I told you last time we looked at this, somewhere in the countryside of Judea to a very large crowd of people that have gathered. He calls them disciples. There are some who are more interested in him than others, some that may even be believers in that group of disciples. But disciples does not necessarily mean believer. Understand that. It means learner. It means follower. There's a curiosity with Christ. There are some in the crowd that believe he is of the devil. There are some in the crowd who believes he's of God. And I want you to also remember this. Jesus is speaking to devout religious people. Understand that. This is not like our culture. This is a very religious culture he is speaking to. Very traditional in their religion. They're followers of these Pharisees and scribes. And Jesus, you would think, what do you say to religious people? When you're talking to religious people, what do you talk about? The love of God, the grace of God, how to have a happier life. No, Jesus basically talks about hell. He talks about hell to this group of religious people. That's what he does. He talks about judgment to this crowd of religious people. Beware, he says in verse 1, of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. These who are the purveyors of your religion, you beware of them. You watch out for what they are saying and teaching. In fact, he goes on, he is saying to them, you had better escape this religion. You need to get out of this religion. Don't let it permeate your life. That's what leaven does. Don't let their hypocrisy become part of your life. Don't be so attached to it that you become like them. See, because verse 5 I just read to you, that's where he's headed. I warn you, to whom to fear the one who after he is killed, has authority to cast you into hell. See, most people think hell is a place for Hitler. They're fine if you say, oh, there is a hell for Hitler. They'll say that, then maybe Stalin and Saddam Hussein or mass murderers. Or people who are just really grossly immoral. But understand, in hell, that group is going to be the minority in hell. The majority of the people in hell will be religious people who followed a religion that took them down the wrong path. Who followed a religion that promised life but did not deliver. Followed a religion that was not the narrow way but was the broad way. Was not the narrow gate, but was the wide gate. It was a religion that was man-centered, not God-centered. A religion that spoke of man's efforts to get to God rather than God coming down to man. That's the difference, folks, right there. I've said it over and over to you. That's what sets Christianity apart. We are about God coming down to us, not us trying to get to God. Man's religions are all the efforts to somehow earn points with God. Christ got all the points I need. I trust him. And they think some people think, well, God should accept religious people who are sincere no matter what their religion is. But folks, to be sincerely wrong will not get you to heaven. Sincerity is not the measure. See, these people all expected, this crowd, they all expected to go to heaven because they're good religious people, and after all, they are worshiping the God of the Old Testament. After all, they are believing in the Old Testament scriptures. After all, they are looking for the Messiah. But Jesus warns them about going to hell by these leaders who are purveyors of apostate Judaism. They had long ago abandoned the true worship of the Old Testament. And now it's an apostate Judaism. It's a hypocritical. It's all about the outward, not the inward change. And that's why Jesus says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees' hypocrisy. And I will say this to you, all false religion is hypocrisy. It's all hypocrisy. It's all outward. There's no change inward. It's all outward. So Jesus says a lot about hell in Matthew 5. He says, you shall be guilty enough to go into fiery hell. Matthew 5:29, the whole body to be thrown into hell. So it's a subject that Jesus does not avoid, though it's not a fun subject to talk about. He does talk about it. Look at verse 1 and the beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. I've told you that's what leaven does. It permeates, influences how the term is used here in influencing you. Basically, you've got to escape this false religion. Don't let yourselves become, as Matthew 23 says, these false teachers who try to make, they are sons of hell who try to produce sons of hell. They go out proselyting, trying to produce sons of hell just like themselves. So he is warning them about their religion, and it can't save them. It can send you to hell. Stay away from ceremonial and ritual religions that focus only on the outside. That's the point. Religions like that are dangerous because they get people feeling comfortable that everything's okay because the outside was okay. But nothing changes in the heart. As we saw last week, as we talked last 2 weeks ago, rather. No love from the heart. Lust in the heart, no dealing with these issues of the heart, just looking like everything's good and okay spiritually. So Jesus gives them some words here, teaching here, to how they can avoid hypocrisy. That's where this passage is going. It goes like this all the way down to verse 12, actually. But we're going to look at a few of these this morning, how you avoid this hypocrisy. And the first things he say, I alluded to these last time, but in verses 2 and 3, he's saying everything will that is hidden will be known. That's what he says in verse 2. God was going to one day uncover the truth. The truth will come out. Accordingly, whatever you have said in the dark, verse 3 says, will be heard in the light, and whatever you have whispered in the inner rooms will be proclaimed upon the housetops. So here's a motivation for you. It's all going to be known. God's going to make it all known anyway. Why allow yourselves to try to hide who you really are? Because God will uncover the truth. No one will escape this exposure. Verse 14 of Ecclesiastes 12, for God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it's good or evil. He will render, according to Romans 2:6, to each man according to his deeds, verse 16, on the day when, according to my gospel, God will judge the secrets of men through Jesus Christ. And 1 Corinthians 4:5, therefore do not go on passing judgment for the time, but wait until the Lord comes, who will bring to light things hidden in darkness and disclose the motives of men's hearts. So this is God just knowing the truth, and he will expose the truth one day. See, hypocrites know they're hypocrites. They know that they are teaching one thing, these false teachers especially, they're teaching one thing and living something else. They know that. They're good at self-deception. They know their heart is corrupt. They know there's something amiss inside. They know whether their salvation is real or not. They know if they have power over their sin or not. They know if they have desires for holiness or not. You can say those things to them. And they know. They know they don't have those things. They know they don't have true joy. And they really know this if they associate with non-hypocrites, because they see the difference. They say, wow, it's not me. So, he's saying avoid this false religion. Tares and wheat are hard for us to know outwardly. We can't tell the difference, but God knows. God knows who is true. In the church today, it's easy to make a profession about something and your heart not be connected to what you just said. You can say you have a relationship with God, but that doesn't mean you really have a relationship with God. We accommodate that. The church accommodates that. That words are all that matter, just so you say the right things. It's all that matters. They said it, but their heart was so disconnected from what they just said. That happens a lot. In verse 3, he uses the word inner room. I told you a couple weeks ago, that referred to some homes would have the inner room, basically a room where you would keep things from robbers, or you would keep things, or you wanted to have private conversations, you would go to the inner room of the house. Didn't have outer walls, it just in terms of to the outside. It just had your wall inside your house. And Jesus is saying there, whatever is on the inner life, the inner heart of a person, that will be revealed. That's what he's saying. It will be exposed. In fact, he says the housetops. The housetops is where you would go on these flat homes to declare something. It will be declared from the housetops. So it will be made known. Everything is going to be made known. One day, Revelation 20 says, the books will be open. Revelation 20, 11 through 15, and every man is going to be judged out of those books. So, he starts by giving those strong words of why you want to avoid hypocrisy, why you religious people want to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, hypocrisy, why you want to stay away from hypocrisy. In verses 4 and 5, He says to them, hypocrisy will lead to hell. You see in verse 4, I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body, and after they have no more, what can they do? He's giving an extreme illustration here. I think what it means is basically, don't be afraid of those people when the worst they can do to you is kill you. That's the worst they can do, is kill you. He's just using an extreme example. They can do a lot of things short of that. So he just takes the extreme and say, the worst they can do is kill you. And even if they do that, it's heaven for a true believer. Even if they do that. But the worst they can do that could ever happen to any of us is that someone would kill us because we are Christian. Because we reject their false religion. Because we reject to go the path they're going down. And I think this is at the heart of hypocrisy right here. The fear of man. The fear of man. Fear of man means I am very preoccupied with what people think of me. I'm very preoccupied with how I can get people to like me. What do I need to do to be part of this group or part of that group? What do I need to do? How I can get people, in the case of the Pharisees, it was how can I get their trust? How can I get them to get their confidence so that I can get money from them? One thing. But how can I be elevated in the eyes of other people? This is serious. If you really evaluate your struggles with a lot of things, it's probably the fear of man is at the root of it. That makes you do things contrary to what you really believe in your heart, maybe. Maybe you're a Christian. Maybe it makes you do things really contrary to what you believe is right in your own heart. But because you want to be part of that group so bad, and you fear man. See, what basically is that man controls your actions. Somebody else is controlling your actions other than God. That's fear of man. That's why Proverbs calls it a snare. It's a trap. It's a web you get caught in. I'm trying to please everybody, so I don't care. You know, I believe this in my heart, but I'm going to do these actions. Or I don't believe it in my heart, but I'm going to do it because I want to be part of this group. I don't know, but fear of man is the problem. Listen, you look at the biggest reasons people are Christians, unchristians. You look at our world, it's all about fear of man, I promise you. Because the opposite of that is fearing God. Are you a God-fearer or a man-fearer? Man-fearer. That's the question. See, I think that's the root of this. Of hypocrisy. Fearing man will lead you to hell. Doesn't mean as a Christian we don't fall into it at times. We certainly do. I do. But that's where your focus is on pleasing men. Your focus is on fear. Fear is to trust. trusting man rather than trusting God. Looking to man to meet some need I have that only God can meet. Pharisees, you see, they have fear of man because they want to get something from people in their position. They want to get the loyalty of the people, money from the people. They want to have the best seats. They want to be elevated in the eyes of the people. They want all the elaborate greetings in the marketplace, Jesus says. They want all the fancy stuff. That's a false teacher. Doesn't worship God, worships people. It's important to keep the people happy so the people will meet me, give me what I want. There are so many angles to this issue. So many angles I could go down. If I have time, I will, but I don't have right now, but I'll come back to that. But this is the heart of hypocrisy. What will people think? And see, this is what Jesus is trying to say. If you're living for what people think, it could send you to hell. In the worst case scenario, people fear dying, and the worst thing that could happen is they might kill you, but the best thing that could happen to you is death if you're a Christian. It's promotion time into heaven. Let me give you some examples here from the scripture. You don't have to turn to all of these, but this was a real issue for this culture especially. John 9:22. Do you remember the scene of the man that was blind for 40 years? Jesus heals him. They need verification from the parents that this man is really the one that was blind all those years. They go to the parents to ask the parents about, is this true about your son? Is it true that he's healed? His parents say in verse 22 of John chapter 9, his parents said this because they said, well, he's old. Here's what they said. They said, he's old enough, go ask him. In other words, they didn't want to answer the question. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews. See that? Afraid of the Jews, the leaders. For the Jews had already agreed that if anyone confessed him to be Christ, Jesus, he was to be put out of the synagogue. You see that? Fear of man. Fear I'll be put out of the synagogue if I acknowledge anything about Christ and his power and that he is the Christ. In John 12, verse 37 through 43, it says this. I'm going to read all this, but just a couple of these verses. He says, but though he had performed so many signs before them, get that, so many miracles, so much evidence in front of everybody, they were not believing in him. It does say some of the leaders did believe in him, but because of the Pharisees, they were not confessing him for fear that they would be put out of the synagogue. Here's what he says. They love the approval of men rather than the approval of God. See that? Hypocrisy. Thinking one thing, doing something else. That's what I told you last time I preached was about Peter. He knew full well that Gentiles were part of the church, were part of the kingdom of God. He ate with them until the circumcision party came to town and he wouldn't eat with them anymore. And Paul says, Peter, you're a hypocrite. That's hypocrisy. Let these men control you. Do you fear these men more than you fear God? It will make you do something like that. John 7:11. So the Jews were seeking him at the feast and were saying, where is he? And there was much grumbling among the crowds concerning him. Some were saying he's a good man. Others were saying, no, he leads the people astray. Yet no one was speaking openly. John 7:13 says, no one was speaking openly of him for fear of the Jews. See, that's why Proverbs 29, I think the backdrop of this passage is Proverbs 29:25, the fear of man brings a snare, but he who trusts in the Lord will be exalted. Trusting in man will bring a snare. Trusting in the Lord will bring exaltation. Snares to catch you, to get you tangled up. If that's what you are, a people pleaser, the leaven of the Pharisees have a tremendous effect on you. Hypocrisy. It's at the heart of it. I struggle with it. You struggle with it. In verse 5, he says, don't fear man. He says, I will warn you who you should fear. Fear the one who, after he has killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. See that phrase, yes, I tell you, fear him? You say, who's that? And somebody say, well, that's Satan, isn't it? That's not Satan. That's God. Satan doesn't cast, understand this, Satan does not cast anybody into hell. Satan himself will be cast into hell one day. He does not cast anyone into hell. Hell is made for Satan and his angels, his demons. He's not the king of hell. God's the king of hell. God rules over hell. And no place in the Bible, and I thought some good comments this morning in our Sunday school class is about, we're never told anywhere to fear Satan. You're not told to fear Satan. If you're a Christian, you're not to fear Satan. If you're not a Christian, then you are of your father, the devil. You are in his domain. But if you're a Christian, greater is he that is in you than he is in the world. We're never told to fear Satan. We're just to resist him, as was pointed out. Be firm in your faith and resist the devil. It says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom in Proverbs. Everything in my Christian life starts with fearing God. We used to call people God-fearers. That means they were godly people. That means they were people who were submitted to God. That meant they were people who trusted God, who looked to God. It's not that they just ran and hid. It's that they knew they were right with God, though they were sinners. They knew they had a right standing with God because even though they were sinners, they knew they were forgiven because of Christ. They were God-fearers in that sense. And they know that he has the power over life and death. See, some people who don't believe in hell have a problem when they come to this passage. They want to call that word hell there in verse 5, the grave. The grave. That he has the authority, the one who has the authority to cast you into the grave. Don't fear men. All they can do is kill you. Fear God who can kill you and cast you into the grave. That makes no sense. How is that a contrast? God can do no more to you than man can do to you. Man can throw you in a grave. See, there's a contrast going on here. A contrast. The contrast is man can kill you. That's the end of his ability. He has no more ability, no, nothing else over you. He can drag your body through the streets if he wants to, but you don't care. But God can kill you, and he can cast you into hell. In other words, there's something beyond death. There's something beyond death. And this verse points to that. And cast you into hell. It is appointed a man once to die, and after this, we all have an appointment with death. God's given us an appointed time when we're going to die. And after that, something else happens. It's not reincarnation. It's not annihilation. Something happens to us. The word hell is the word Gehenna, the Valley of Hinnom. If you go to Israel today and you were to go to Jerusalem, the southwest area outside the city is the Valley of Hinnom. It's basically the trash dump of the city where they burn the trash. But there was a time when that area got its name in the Old Testament. It was where they worshipped idols. The Jews wrongly, in disobedience to God, worshipped idols. Baal and Molech worshipped in that valley. Some of the kings, Manasseh and others, gave sacrifices to those idols. In fact, they burned their own children to appease the anger, especially of Molech. Many people, this is their worship. This is how perverted idol worship can get. where you can somehow justify even that to appease this God. Eventually, Josiah comes along and puts an end to that. And he, no more Valley of Hinnom anymore for that purpose. And he just turns it into a trash dump. And it's always smoldering, it's always burning. And the Jews just took the term Hinnom, Gena, and made it the term for hell. But that's the picture of hell. Always burning, ever burning, smoke. And Jesus says it's going to be a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth, darkness, torment, and burning. So he's saying, you want to fear somebody? Fear somebody that can do that to you. Fear somebody that can do that to you. Man can't do that to you. He can take your life, but he has no control over what happens after death. That's pretty strong. How do you avoid being a hypocrite? Stop fearing man and fear God. That's what he's saying to him. He has these words, and another reason is just the divine omniscience of God. Once again, verse 6 and 7. When you read these words in other contexts, they're really more comforting than they are here. The context here is in the context of hypocrisy. The context here is in the context of fearing God and not fearing man. And Jesus says, are not five sparrows sold for 2 cents, yet not one of them is forgotten before God? Indeed, the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, you are more valuable than many sparrows. As a believer, I find those things very comforting. But an unbeliever would not find those words comforting. The divine omniscience of God is a comforting doctrine to me as a Christian. It is not a comforting doctrine to an unbeliever. God knows everything about you. You can't hide anything about you from God. And so he's saying, so in the context of hypocrisy, he's saying God knows every detail of your life. And it's not like he's just decided, well, I'm going to learn something about you today. No, he just knows it. He never learns anything. He never researches anything. He never goes to the internet. He never does any of that. He knows it all. He knows about sparrows. Sparrows are so insignificant. I had one trapped in my garage the other day. The possum was there a month ago. Today, now it's a sparrow. A sparrow was is trapped in there. Just a little bird. This was, in the marketplace, food for the poor. They would catch these in nets and would defeather them and roast them. And that was a meal for poor people. So nobody would think about a sparrow. It's sold so cheaply. Small bird. But God notices them. God knows about them. Every single hair on your head, it's numbered. You look in the mirror and how many hairs on my head? I mean, you have no idea. Some people may, but some people had no idea. No idea. I read this, I heard this. If you the average is 100,000 or more. If you have red hair, you have 90,000 hairs on your head. If you have black hair, you have 110,000. Blonde hair, you have 140,000. I do not know who counted this, but this is what they say. But you still don't know the exact number. And your hair, you have less hair than when you came in the room this morning. It's always, some are always falling out, but some is always growing. God knows the roots. He knows the roots. He knows what's there. He knows you and me that well, right? And you take that by 7 or 8 billion people on the planet or more, and you've got, he knows all of that. He knows everything. See, God knows if you are fearing him or fearing man. That's the point. He knows. You aren't fooling him. You may fool everybody else. That's hypocrisy. Everybody else may think, well, that's a God-fearer, but you're not. And then he says this at the end of verse 7, do not fear. I'm sure by now, after these words, there are people in the crowd that are trembling. And he has just said at the end of verse 5, I tell you, fear him, end of verse 5. Now we come down to verse 7, do not fear. I think what he's saying is a different kind of fear now. If you fear God, you have no reason to fear. You follow me? The safest place you can be is in the fear of God. That's what he's saying. Fear not, you are more valuable than many sparrows. Listen, I think there's transition in that. Fear God, end of verse 5. He's saying you need to fear God, not man. And I'm saying, fear not. Sensing maybe trembling in the audience, maybe the whole idea that you're more valuable than sparrows, that the safest place you can be is in the fear of God. Because what does he do in the next verse, which we're not going to cover today, but the next verse, what does he say? Everyone who confesses me before men, the Son of Man will confess him before the angels of God. See where he's moving this to? The remedy for this is to, and fearing God, is to confess Christ before men. And God will, he will confess you before the angels of God. That's how you escape. That's how you escape hell. That's how you escape hypocrisy, by confessing Christ. That's where he's leading us, people. Get out of your religion. Get out of your false religion. Don't let it take over your lives and permeate your lives and be hypocrites like your leaders. Fear God. He knows you. You can't hide anything from him. Luke 21:16 says, you'll be betrayed if you're a believer. You'll be betrayed even by parents and brothers and relatives and friends, and some will put you to death, and you'll be hated by all because of my name, yet not a hair of your head will perish. See, hypocrisy, why does this matter? It saves us from hypocrisy that fear produces. Remember Peter? Peter betrayed Christ 3 times. Remember that? I would never deny you. He said that so boldly, and then he ends up denying him 3 times. And one of those times, he cursed Christ. And it wasn't like his life was in threat, being threatened for saying it. He was just, some girl said it at a, servants of the priest said it around a fire. And I don't know the man. I don't know the man. And then he swears, I don't know the man. And then he makes eye contact with Jesus, whom he's followed for 3 years. It's the fear of man. And then the Galatians 2:13 scene I told you about. The hypocrisy of wanting to eat with the Gentiles. Getting rebuked by Paul. I love what he eventually learns in 1 Peter 3:13. Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. And do not fear their intimidation, and do not be troubled. See, he learned it. He learned it. He learned that the fear of man was a snare. Fear of man shows us where we put our allegiances, where we put our loyalty. One writer calls it people idolatry. It's where we trust. He says, this author says, it shows us who is really big in our lives, people or God. Think about that. Who is really big in your life, people or God? Are you more afraid of what people can say about you or do to you than you are what God thinks of you and what God can do to you? See that? We trust man because we perceive man has power to do something for us or power to give us something, that man can somehow bless us, make us feel important, make us feel accepted, just make us feel good about us. So we trust man. One of the best books I've ever read is by Ed Welch called When People Are Big and God Is Small. Get that book. When people are big and God is small. Because that's what he's talking about, is we shrink God and we make man big. Make man really big. And we fear man more than we fear God. And I guarantee you, at the root of a lot of your struggles and my struggles is I just want to please people way too much. I have a people idolatry problem, and so do you. It may be your spouse. It may be your children. It may be your work, your boss, or your desire. It may be your neighbors. It may be people in this church. But it is at the root of so many of our problems. It's people idolatry. You know what it is? It's a worship issue. Who are we worshiping? Are we worshiping God? Are we worshiping man? Let me close with Jeremiah 17. Here's the passage. Meditate on this passage. This is your passage to walk out of here with, to meditate on. Jeremiah 17, 5 through 8. The southern kingdom was facing being conquered by the Babylonians. That's sort of the context. They're looking for alliances with other nations to help protect them. Sort of a little bit of the background. There's more to it than that, but that's sort of the general idea. And God really rebukes them here. He says to them, "Thus says the Lord, cursed is the man who trusts in mankind." You could put the word fears. Fear is not in the sense that I'm scared of somebody. The fear as much as I trust in something. I trust in mankind. And makes flesh his strength. And whose heart turns away from the Lord. He will be like a bush in the desert. He will not see when prosperity comes, but will live in stony places in the wilderness, a land of salt without inhabitant. Can you get the scene there? A bush in the desert. You'll be like that when you fear man, when you trust man, when you look into man. But blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, who fears the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. For he will be like a tree planted by the water. A Psalm 1 illustration. Trees by the water that extend its roots by a stream. Will not fear when the heat comes, when the problems come, when the dangers come. Its leaves will be green. It will not be anxious in the year of drought, nor cease to yield fruit. So what do you want to be? Which one do you want to be? And see, that's the thing. I think it's God help me understand what it means to be a tree planted by water so I don't run off and trust in man, but trust in flesh, but trust in you. Trust in you. See, parents who make an idol out of their children, and their children disappoint them, they kind of go up and down with how their kids are doing, right? That's a sure sign they're trusting in their kids. Psychologists are called that codependency. The Bible calls it fear of man. You're letting somebody else's behavior control you. It's ungodly behavior, but it's okay. It's contrary to what I profess in my heart to believe, but it's my kids who I am worshiping and fearing at this moment. And my behavior may be ungodly, but at least it's how I feel, you know. It's always justified. You see that? See how it works? I fear. See, when you fear God, it doesn't matter when the heat comes and they disappoint you and let you down. It doesn't matter what man is doing. The trust is in God. I can still be fruitful in the midst of that heat. They may never change and I'll be okay because I'm planted by the water. Golly, God, help me understand what that means. That should be your prayer of walking out of here today. Help me understand what that means for my feet to be planted by water. I don't want to be in the desert. I don't even know when prosperity comes because I'm in a desert all the time. Even when good things happen, I don't even see them because I'm in the desert so much. Are you in the desert? And it's because you fear man way too much. It can be your spouse. Their ups and downs, you're up and down. Their behavior's right, you're great. Their behavior's bad, you're horrible. See that? See how that works? I guarantee you, if you sit and think about it long enough, you'll say, yeah, I see it myself. God, thank you for this time this morning. Thank you for your word. Thank you for your truth. May we be a people who have our feet planted by water. That we be God fears, not man fears. We thank you and love you and praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.